Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hello, I'm Susan Bilant. I'm your host for today. I'm really excited to be speaking on the phone with Tyler Titchler, author of The Gothic Wanderer, From Transgression to Redemption. Through the centuries, Gothic literature has infiltrated our culture. Why is this? Tyler explores this question among so many others as he takes the reader in his journey through history and man's greatest fears and deepest hope. A journey we all should embark on to discover why is popular culture so fascinated about Gothic. But before we start, let's learn a little bit more about Tyler. Tyler is the author of numerous historical novels, including the Marquette Trilogy, the award-winning Narrow Lives, and most recently, a historical novel in which he played with Gothic themes, Spirit of the North. A lifelong lover of the Gothic in all its aspects, he is also fascinated with the Arthurian legend. Besides his scholarly work, King Arthur's Children, he is currently composing a series of novels that will intertwine the Arthurian legend with Gothic themes and characters. For more information on Tyler and his books, visit www.gothicwanderer.com, and that is GOTHICWANDERER.com. Hi, Tyler. How are you today?
Hi, Susan. I'm doing great. Thank you for asking.
Oh, thank you so much for being with us. You're always my favorite interview, if you didn't know that.
Thank you.
Because I really like and enjoy everything you write. With this book, I'm putting you on a pedestal because I'm a Gothic fan, and not everybody knows that.
Okay.
Why don't we start letting know our readers, what is Gothic? How would you define Gothic?
Well, there's lots of definitions, and I'm writing about specifically Gothic literature. I think there's a fine line to be made between horror and Gothic. I think horror, what we know of as horror films and horror novels today, they tend more to be geared towards shocking people. They tend to be a lot more gory and scary. And the Gothic can be scary and gory, but I think the real focus of the Gothic is much more on the internal person and just the whole psychological aspects of what people are dealing with, and the things like the vampires, the haunted castles, the scary forests, all of those sorts of things are more manifestations of what's really going on internally in the person. So it's more about being haunted inside of you.
More than by visual, I guess.
Yes.
It's kind of a romantic idea also to kind of visit your, at least that's what I find interesting, visit your own fears, and I think that's my attraction to it. Why were you interested in, what do you find interesting about Goth, and especially literature? And are we all the same? Is the attraction the same, or do you think every person is different?
Well, there's lots of people who will tell you that they don't like scary movies. They try to stay away from that. But I think that's because they really, they're afraid to get to that point of looking at what really motivates them and what scares them and the very essences of their souls. And I think what really, I was always interested in, monsters and vampires, Dracula and stuff since I was a kid, and we used to always play Haunted House and all of that. And I talk about in the book briefly how, I was one of those kids that would go in the bathroom, turn off the lights, look in the mirror, try to say bloody murder like 1,000 times without blinking, and supposedly then you were going to be able to see Satan. Well, I never could not blink, or I'd lose count or whatever. But, I think that's all this sort of search for, wanting to know, is there something more than the everyday real world that we see? Is there a supernatural aspect to it? And trying to connect with that more spiritual part of ourselves. And it's not necessarily a dark side. There is the sense of evil in the dark side in the Gothic, but I think it's more than that. I think it's a searching and a wandering until you find, you know, you find that sort of spiritual connection for yourself. And that's really what has fascinated me with it.
Yeah, I think it's also the attraction to the unknown, because horror can be, you know, like a serial killer, or can be stuff like that as well. But in the Gothic literature, it's really figures that you don't know, and they're scary because of this lack of knowledge. And even though, I mean, we all know Dracula, but there's always a new point of view, a new aspect about it that, you know, that will fascinate you because it's something so different from who we are as humans, is what I think. And yet so similar, too.
Yeah, and I exactly. It is about knowledge, and specifically it's about the tradition, the 18th, 19th century Gothic novels. It was really all about forbidden knowledge, and a lot of those novels really started out as a reaction to the French Revolution, and the English authors were, you know, we're trying to come to terms with this horrible event going on across the English Channel, where eventually the government was overthrown and the king was killed. And, you know, they, back in those days, a lot of them believed in the divine right of kings and that the king was God's representative. So this was like reaching for forbidden knowledge, to think that you could kill the God's representative, and at the same time that you could set up your own government and really have freedom. And same thing with the American Revolution a few years before. It was really a real quest for freedom, and forbidden knowledge is that whole question of is freedom justified? Are you allowed to have freedom? And it all really goes back to Adam and Eve eating that apple that is the, you know, offers knowledge, but it's forbidden knowledge.
That is true. That is true. I never saw it that way, though, so thank you for that. It gave me a new perspective about what is really unknown is actually the forbidden knowledge. I'm wondering, what Gothic novels did what are some of the better-known Gothic books that you focus on your study?
Well, the two best-known ones are Household Words, Frankenstein, and Dracula, specifically. And then some other ones that you might not think at first are Gothic. Another really well-known one is Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, which is, of course, about the French Revolution. So it may not seem like a Gothic book at first, but it actually has all kinds of Gothic sub-themes running through it, about the whole turning over of the monarchy and the aristocracy. And Dickens uses all kinds of Gothic references, Gothic themes, comparisons to crosses and wanderers and all kinds of sort of Gothic elements in the novel.
And during your research, you know, I mean, and you're right, I never imagined Dickens would Tale of Two Cities would be considered Gothic. But I'm wondering, did you find, like, in your research, any fascinating figures or stories that the public in general are likely don't know? Or because we all always focus on Frankenstein, Dracula, and werewolves and stuff like that, but never in other stuff. Did you find stuff that surprised you that you didn't know or that you think the public didn't know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of what we have today in terms of vampires especially come from earlier figures. One of them was the Wandering Jew, who may not be the most politically correct figure anymore, but was really fascinating and makes an appearance in numerous novels throughout the 19th century. Basically, he was a shoemaker. It depends on which version of the story you read, but basically, he was a shoemaker who refused to let Christ stop and rest outside of his house as Christ was on his way to Calvary. And as a result, supposedly Christ cursed him to wander the earth for all time. And he becomes this metaphor for the Jewish people, who then, of course, end up being dispersed throughout the world and constantly chased and run out of places and, you know, just constantly being persecuted. So the Wandering Jew appears in many works. First, Matthew Lewis's The Monk in 1795, and influences Samuel Taylor Coleridge's The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, and up through to Dracula. He's one of the main influences on Dracula.
I'm wondering. I mean, a lot of us read the modern Gothic stories of Dracula and all this. What can you tell us about, you know, can you compare how these figures have changed throughout time? Are they the same? Are they different? Do people write them differently now? Or
They've changed a lot. And the subtitle of my book is From Transgression to Redemption. And it all kind of goes back to that idea of the quest for forbidden knowledge I was talking about. The first Gothic novels, the person who commits the transgression, who seeks the forbidden knowledge, he always ends up getting punished because they were so very orthodox in their beliefs, and they were so subjected to, you know, having these patriarchal institutions like the church and the monarchy and the government overseeing them. And as the 19th century goes on and we get into like the Victorian period, those figures really change. Initially, they're not, even if they make a mistake and they repent their mistake, they're still going to be like damned for all eternity. And then you get to a book like in the 1840s, they had, you know, they did serial novels, and they also had what they called penny dreadfuls, which were like these serial, and if you want to call them like a continuing comic book of the day. They weren't cartoons, but they were like a serial story that would run for a year or two. And one of the biggest ones was called Varney the Vampire. And it traces this horrible vampire in the opening chapters of the book throughout his time as a vampire, and eventually he becomes very regretful about being a vampire and wishing he could just stop being a vampire, wishing he could kill himself. He keeps trying to destroy himself. He, you know, he tries to throw himself into the sea, but the earth refuses him and pushes him up on shore. He tries to jump into the volcano, but the volcano spits him back out, and he just wants to end his misery, and he feels guilt about the fact that he has to suck human blood to survive. And eventually he is allowed to, he goes and he talks to a clergyman, and in the end he basically is redeemed. And same thing with Dracula later, about 50 years later, when Dracula is killed, even though Dracula is probably the scariest figure in all of Gothic literature, when Dracula is finally killed, the characters notice that this look of peace comes over his face, like he didn't like being a vampire either. He was just possessed by this being within him that he's now released, and he's free. And so as the Gothic moves up to the modern day, you know, now you have books like Twilight, where the female main character, she's seeking forbidden knowledge, wondering, can I actually, you know, marry this vampire? Can I become a vampire with him? And so the vampire, instead of being this evil creature, becomes this sort of like, almost like the perfect husband, the perfect mate. And so the, you know, the Gothic character eventually becomes redeemed, and even in some cases, he becomes a sort of a superhero figure.
Yeah, and yet, you know, because my daughter's got me into Twilight, and yet one of the things that all the girls go crazy about Twilight is this. Oh, I forget his name. Is it Edward? Whatever.
Edward Cullen.
Yeah, he still portrays this Dracula who does not want to be Dracula. Because he doesn't want her to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's this melancholy. And if I recall correctly, it's the same thing with, I forgot, the Brad Pitt movie with vampires.
Oh, Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah. Also, this Brad Pitt's character didn't want to be a vampire. And so I guess there's some aspects that might have stayed the same in the character.
Yeah, it's a lot of guilt and a lot of this striving to redeem yourself, and it has become less of an issue in these later books. It's still there to some degree, but they become these sympathetic figures,
yes,
which they weren't in the earlier works.
Yes, before they were scary. Now they're romantic.
Yes.
And attractive and sympathetic. But I wonder, you have this figure in that you found in all this, all your research that you call the Gothic Wonder. Why don't you tell us a little bit of why did you focus on this figure and who is basically the Gothic Wonder?
Well, I'll tell you that by telling you a little personal story. And I think that this is really why the figure is so important to everybody and why everybody can relate to it. Everybody has moments in their lives where they go through tough times, and you know, they have to reassess where they are at life, and they feel like they're lost or they're wandering. And for me, that happened when I moved away from home the first time. I went down to Kalamazoo, Michigan, Western Michigan University, to get my PhD. And I just felt horrible. I felt homesick and lonely, and I didn't know anybody there, and it was just a big transition for me. And I think I had been attracted to the Gothic before that, but I was writing a paper for one of my classes, and it talked about how one of the characters was displaced. And I realized that was me. I felt displaced. I didn't belong here. I belonged back in Upper Michigan. That was home. And just from there, the whole interest in the Gothic kind of developed for me, and understanding that this sense of wanting to return to home and the sense of being lost. And, you know, I think we all go through that, whether it's moving away from home or going through a divorce or losing a job or whatever the case is, and we feel suddenly like we're in this nightmare that we're living. We're wandering around in this horrible Gothic sort of world and just trying to find a way out of it.
That is so true. It's like being in a limbo, you know, just lost in a kind of a mist or something.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. Join us and hear both well-known and upcoming writers talking candidly about their life experience as well as the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, we strive to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are available 24/7 through direct podcast as well as MP3 download for your convenience. Please visit us on InsideScoopLive.com. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Tyler Titchler, author of The Gothic Wanderer. Stay tuned because we're going to continue this very interesting conversation with Tyler and learn more about man's pursuit of forbidden truth, Gothic literature through the centuries, and its relevance in our lives today. But in the meantime, you can check out his book, The Gothic Wanderer, by visiting his website at www.gothicwanderer.com. And that is GothicWanderer.com. I went through that too. So when I moved to Italy from the U.S. and had my little girl and whatever, so I felt so out of place. It was almost like always walking in the fog.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a perfect description. Limbo is a perfect description. That's like what the like Brad Pitt, Louis, in the Interview with the Vampire books goes through. Suddenly he's in this different place from what he was, and he can't go back to where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And it all goes to what the romantics would have seen as the myth of consciousness, where you go from being innocent to going into experience in life and realizing how hard life can be and then wanting to reach the next stage, which is wise innocence, where you can live in that world of experience and yet kind of be detached. detached and calm, and very few people are able to reach that stage usually.
Yeah, I can see why this gothic figure is so relevant and attractive to people today as well. Because that was something that I always wonder. I mean, we're talking about hundreds of years of an era or you're right, there's so many definitions, because Gothic can be art, history can be fashion, can be mm-hmm. architecture. So it's been with us all throughout these hundreds of years, and it seems to be here to stay. So I can see why it is just relevant to our nature when we go through changes and we have unknown things. Well, thank you so much for that analogy. I didn't really understand it that way, and now it's making sense. Obviously, you know, this hundreds of years of Gothic figure has influenced our popular culture. Can you tell us a little bit of how?
Oh, sure. I think it's probably more relevant now than even back then. Let me give you one example. One of the most overlooked Gothic novels, and really to me one, perhaps the most fascinating of all, was Mary Shelley's book The Last Man, which she wrote in 1826. And, of course, she's the author of Frankenstein, which is her best-known work and probably the only one most people read. But The Last Man, well, Frankenstein is often considered the first science fiction book as well, but The Last Man is really the first science fiction novel in the sense that it's set in the future. She sets it in the years about 2080 to the year 2100.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine, she sets her book that far in the future, back in 1826. And it's about this terrible plague that wipes out the human race and is just really quite a stunning book. And she wrote it because she herself felt like she was the last man on earth. She had lost her husband Percy Shelley the poet, and her good friend Lord Byron had died, and she felt like she was the last of the romantics, the last of that literary group of friends. And it's just really a shocking book, and I think it really parallels a lot with the modern day, where we have these fears of, you know, just not so much now, but 20, 30 years ago, everybody was so worried about AIDS and how that could wipe out the human race. And we hear about the bird flu and, you know, all these other possible diseases, and people using viruses as, I can't think of the word, but like global warfare.
Yeah, I think it's biological weapons.
Yes, biological weapons, exactly. And even just last year, there was a film about a horrible disease that killed so many people. I can't think of the name of it now, but I mentioned in my book it had Matt Damon and Gwyneth Paltrow and Jude Law in it. And you know, this fear is always there. There's always this fear existing in humans that I think the biggest thing in life is this whole how we cope with fear and how we overcome fear. It's, you know, it can become immobilizing, and these sort of doom and gloom scenarios that we have about, you know, nuclear war, the apocalypse, whatever the case is, and trying to cope with all those issues in the Gothic. So I think Mary Shelley was really a real visionary in how she treated all that.
And I'm wondering, is it just me, or is just even more on TV than before? Because, you know, if you look at some of these, I mean, everything, if you look at, and I don't know, it's because we're getting, you know, we're on 2012, but we see all these doom documentaries about 2012, and then we see a lot of, even the Bible things that they put on Discovery Channel, it all has to do with the seven signs and the end of the war and the apocalypse. And then you look at the other, channels, and you will see Haunted History. And, I mean, there's just so many, and at the same time, even zombie, you know, there's a series on TV about zombies, and we have Vampire Diaries, Supernatural. It's just everywhere, and I wonder, it has it always been like this, or is just the fascination keep growing, or is it the media that's making it seem like it's just more now than before?
It's hard to say. I mean, the media has invaded our lives in so many ways that we probably are bombarded by it more than we are now. But when you go back to, like, when the first Gothic novels came out, the number of Gothic novels that were produced was just astounding. And there's no way you could ever read them all. Between the novels and the penny dreadfuls and the short stories that were written, I mean, I've read dozens of Gothic novels from, you know, roughly about 1790 to 1820. That was the real highlight. All the time I'm constantly hearing about more of them.
And it's surprising, especially because of the era where the church controlled all the media and science and everything was bad, punishable by death or in the Inquisitions, and mm-hmm. we were coming out of those threats. And I'm very surprised about that it was so much in numbers coming out.
Yeah, and of course it was in England, and so England wasn't Catholic, but they were constantly, the Gothic novels, they loved to constantly pick on the Catholic Church and show how the Catholic Church was superstitious and we needed to be rational. And a lot of the Gothic novels were set during the Inquisition, and they show people being tortured by the Inquisition and burned at the stake and all kinds of things like that. So,
is there a difference between the Gothic that we see in Europe and the Gothic literature that comes from America? Do you find any difference of I don't know, I don't want to say style, but of what do they focus on, the same thing?
Yeah, there are similarities and differences, and in my book I primarily focused on the British Gothic novels.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as America goes, America was a new nation at the time that these British Gothic novels were written, and the first real American Gothic author was Charles Brockden Brown, and he wrote novels in the 1790s. But James Fenimore Cooper, who's best known for Last of the Mohicans, I would say he was a huge innovator. He really made the Gothic an American genre in itself, and he took, you know, previously the novels had, you know, these haunted castles and stuff, and instead he made the horror more in the forests of America, and they were, you know, there's these savages, the Native Americans today, but they weren't as kind to them back then, lurking in the forests, there's wild animals, so all that is scary. And then someone like Nathaniel Hawthorne, he used a lot of early American history in terms of the Puritans and put those into his novels to create Gothic stories, and focused a lot upon, you know, issues of sin and damnation and guilt, and, you know, books like The Scarlet Letter, The House of the Seven Gables.
It's so interesting. I could just sit here and talk about it, but unfortunately we're running out of time. And I want to make sure that we get your website out there. And for everybody, I really encourage you to check out www.gothicwanderer.com, and that is GothicWanderer.com. Where do you think we're going to, I mean, can you picture Gothic literature, I don't know, 25 years from now if we make it after 2012 in December?
Well, first let me say, Susan, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure we'll make it. I am an optimist, and that's partly what I love about the Gothic, is it tries to overcome fear
mm-hmm.
and believe that in the end everything is going to work out. I think one thing I didn't mention is the Gothic and how it is the impetus to the creation of the superhero figures. And I talk about that towards the end of my book, about how it influenced characters like Tarzan and then Superman and Batman. And so I think, you know, the superheroes are such a big thing right now that I think we'll see a lot more going in that direction, and a lot more towards sympathy and hopefully the human race moving away from fear. And I think that even, you know, in the last few years, what we've seen going on in the Middle East with all these revolutions you know, it reminds me right back to the French Revolution, that people are saying, I'm not going to spend the rest of my life living in fear. I'm not going to let somebody else control me. And so I'm optimistic that hopefully that is the direction we're going.
No, that is very well said. I hope so, too. I actually think that with all the darkness of some of our Gothic stories, if there's always a light after the tunnel, you know, at the end of the tunnel on them. At least I find them that way. And if we look at everything that they're showing, and some people really dislike them because of the way they present the stories and the, you know, gruesomeness of them in a lot of the series that I see on TV and some of the books, there's always, you know, a conquest to the darkness. And, you know, and the bravery to fight the darkness and the unknown. So I'm pretty sure that that we will make it under the time trial.
I think we're still evolving.
Yeah, and, I think it's this search for conquering the darkness and the unknown that really appealed to people, and it's our nature. That's what we've done ever since the caveman years, you know? So thank you so much for being here. I definitely am checking out your book. I'm really interested on it. So, and I am enjoying your previous one, too, that I'm reading right now, The Spirits of the North. So thank you, and you have a fan here.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And, of course, Spirit of the North is a Gothic novel in its own right. So I hope you enjoy that.
I sure am enjoying it. Listeners, thank you so much for being with us again, and until next time.